Chapter 29. Caged Aura Sphere. As Rick and H fought back and forth across the training room, Rick reflected on how well he was doing. He didn't actually expect to win, but he felt competent. After so long struggling to pull together his new portfolio, it was an amazing feeling. Fighting hand to hand, he could mostly keep up with his mentor, and if any blows slipped through, his defensive cores shrugged them off. When H launched aura bolts or embers from the sides or behind, he could feel them like flies tickling in the back of his brain. Each time ranged attacks approached him, they were sucked into the last of his crystal spheres. Though he was often overpowered by his mentor, he naturally drew on his demonic bond and managed to hold his ground. When at last they parted, H gave him a reluctant nod.
"That wasn't embarrassing. You've come a long way."
"Thanks." Rick could feel the improvement in himself, but wanted to check his portfolio to see the difference in hard numbers. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether Tier, 11th. Ether Score, 489. Lucrum Generation, 91,000. Enhanced Generation, 164,350. Current Lucrum, 12,900. Rick Hunter's Lucrum Portfolio. Foundation, 3,800, Level 6. Dark Blood Kettle, 17,900, level 4. Triune Golden Spheres, 73,350. Defensive Sphere, 26,250. Absorption Sphere, 22,600. Sensory Sphere, 24,500. Offensive Lucor, 14,350, level 8. Defensive Lucor, 38,700, level 9. Bunyan Step, 16,250, level 9. Demonic Fusion, Katenka, 24,500, Stage 1. Graham's Stake, 30,150, Level 4. Economic Bond, Buffed Gauge and Yithsil, 2,000, Stage 2. Total Lucrum, 147,650. Enhanced Total, 221,000. If someone looked at his generation rate from the outside, they might conclude that he had over 200,000 Lucrum, which was insane. Rick had made the app separate out the values of the Triune Golden Spheres and the Demonic Bond so that he could still see his base generation rate. It continued to slow as it got closer to six figures, which he'd heard was a major hurdle. Now he could understand why fighters valued alternative methods like the spheres or bonds. The difference between himself now and the fighter he'd been several years ago was huge. An ordinary birthrider with lazy training and a generation rate of 100,000 lucrum would no longer be an overwhelming threat to him. Of course, he'd moved on to more dangerous opponents, so at times it felt like he'd made no progress at all. That thought made him frown and look to H. "How far have I come on the scale of the showdown? I can win a few minor events, but I'm obviously no celebrity."
"Your momentum is good, but your current position isn't."
H pulled out a cigarette and lit it slowly while he spoke.
"There are a lot of people in the junior showdown who could beat you. It's just that you haven't gone up against them yet. Obviously, the senior showdown is out of your league, much less those who are truly at the top of the world. But you're on an upward trajectory, unlike those who will clearly plateau long before that."
"What happens to those who do?"
"Some become the elites of a specific tier. Others retire and try to get a job training others. After all, those who train wouldn't work with others if they could fight at the highest level themselves."
It sounded self-deprecating, but Rick didn't believe it. There was too much of a vicious edge to H, both his personality and his skills. So Rick only smiled and said, "And how does this all compare to those who fight with their lives on the line?"
"Good question."
H stared at him without expression for a time, his cigarette burning away at an unnaturally swift rate. Eventually, he turned away.
"Get ready for your match tomorrow. This one will require everything you have."
Despite the rising tension, Rick slept well that night. Maybe elite athletes worried about their records, but he was happy so long as he was growing and also getting paid. Yes, it would be good to do well in the fight and get a seal, but the recognition meant nothing to him. A loss could actually be more valuable if it allowed his defensive core to grow. In the morning, Rick was up early and ready. H gave him a sour nod and then guided them to an armored limousine that took them directly to the showdown arena. While most of the arenas Rick had fought in looked like modern sports stadiums, because they also served that purpose, the Siberian arena was nothing like that. It was a menacing circle of dark stone several stories high, used for nothing but combat events. There were large stands, but in the events so far, they'd mostly been filled by grim-eyed fighters, not true audiences. When they passed through into the fighter areas beneath the stands, Rick noticed that things were a little different this time. He still saw the usual fighters and other representatives, but he could hear a crowd that had already been drinking, from the sound of it. Profit might not be as important in Siberia, but tonight was clearly the one that mattered for honor or whatever standard they used. There's only one caged aura sphere event, and I don't have the sphere generation technology, so unfortunately your only preparation will be video. As soon as they entered their room, which was completely bare, H turned to him and began pulling something up on his tablet. The event should be well suited to your current level of skill, but you need to make sure there are no surprise disqualifications due to the arena. Not sure what that meant, Rick took the tablet and watched the video of past matches. The competitors fought within a large sphere of nearly clear aura, attempting to knock one another out of the sphere. Though the bottom of the sphere touched the ground, there was nearly nothing to stand on, which meant that getting pushed in any direction could disqualify a person. He'd expected the competitors to be holding themselves in place with lucors, but watching past matches quickly revealed that the sphere itself was the trick. The aura seemed to react a bit like a floor, but a weak one. Fighters could land on any part of it and stick there, or even run along the sides, but if they struck it at speed, they broke through and were disqualified. After reviewing the past matches queued up for him, Rick realized that H was right. Not understanding how the sphere worked might cause a few problems, but it wasn't the center of the event, simply a staging ground for the battle within. Rick set it aside and meditated until it was time for his event. It felt like almost no time at all before H was kicking him in the side and grunting at the screen. Taking a deep breath, Rick rose to his feet and headed out toward the arena. In past events, he'd been able to ignore the roar of the crowds. The stadiums had been bigger than the time he'd participated in the multi-tier tournament, but it was much the same. But that day, the crowds were chanting and even singing. When he looked into the audience, he saw many groups of grim fighters, some of them looking less than human due to demonic fusions. Though he tried to pull his gaze back down to the aura sphere glimmering in the center of the arena, Rick's attention was caught by a small group opposite him. Little different from the other groups of sponsors, yet Alger stood among them, his hands laced atop his cane. For once, he wasn't wearing absurd colors, simply a black coat with blue linings. It made him menacing, though in a slightly generic way. But the manic grin on his face was visible even from the distance. "Someone you know," Katenka spoke softly from over one shoulder. Not wanting to look crazy, Rick merely shook his head slightly and kept moving forward.
"Focus. I'll do what I can, but this is mostly on you."
With that, she faded away, but it had been enough. Rick kept his gaze down, instead examining all the other contestants approaching the sphere. Most he didn't recognize, but Ragast was on the opposite side. The younger man looked utterly focused, as if he wasn't even aware of the audience around them. An official stepped up beside the aura sphere and raised a finger just beside it.
"The caged aura sphere will now begin. As soon as the sphere is lit, warriors may enter. Any remaining on the ground when the sphere is completed will be disqualified. The match will continue until only one warrior is within or in contact with the sphere. Begin."
The woman's finger tapped the side of the aura sphere, and it burned brighter with the infusion of energy. Several fighters launched themselves into the sphere immediately, one getting hit in the face with a burst of white light from Ragast, who fired instead of entering. Clever, but it wouldn't last long, because the rush of aura was now sweeping over the floor to disqualify any who lingered. Rick leapt just before it reached him. As he flew through the air, for a moment he was sure that he would bounce off the aura and fall, disqualified in utter humiliation. But not only did he pass through the barrier without much trouble, No one attacked him when he entered. With space to breathe, Rick experimented with the oddly sticky aura. Even though he was against a nearly vertical wall, his shoe had traction, and he could stick his hand in the aura and hold himself in place easily. This wasn't so bad. He summoned the triune golden spheres around himself and got ready. Almost immediately, the golden gleam attracted the attention of a woman near the top of the sphere. She had her legs hooked into the aura so she could hang upside down, using both hands to rain destruction on all the other competitors. Rick had no choice but to leap aside to avoid the bursts of aura, which sent him sailing through the center of the sphere. Other fighters tried to target him as he moved, yet he could feel them. He didn't need to think about it, he just felt something moving toward his back. In midair, Rick used a bunion step to change his direction, throwing himself to the side of the sphere again. As soon as he finished, there was a fist flying for his face. Rick jerked his head back, tumbling down the side of the sphere and barely righting himself. He should have known that no one at this level of competition would be surprised by his swift movement, so they'd already calculated his trajectory and moved to intercept him. With another fighter swooping down toward him, Rick used another bunion step to escape. Once again, he had someone attacking him almost as soon as the movement had stopped. If not for all his footwork training, he would almost certainly have been knocked straight through the side of the sphere and disqualified. He realized that they could easily predict his movements because he would always stop against the sphere. On his third leap, Rick stretched his sensory lucor to its maximum. He appeared on the side of the aura sphere with a foot flying toward his head, but this time he expected it. Rick grabbed the kick and swung the person directly through the side of the sphere. The man broke through the aura, desperately scrabbling to get a grip on him, and shot out into the arena. As far as Rick was concerned, that meant he no longer existed. All that mattered was the world contained within the sphere, which was still filled with warriors. Eliminating one of the people targeting him had earned Rick a bit of breathing room, since they knew that he wasn't an easy target. He took the time to examine the rest of the fight, but it was a chaotic brawl. Too many of the other fighters had flight or agility lucors, leaving his bunion step feeling a little rudimentary. Throwing himself into the middle of that fight would be a mistake. But there was one person remaining stationary, the woman at the top of the sphere. A fighter attempted to creep up the side toward her, only for her to turn at the last second, an arc of aura bursts hammering him into the side of the sphere. He barely managed to cling to it instead of being knocked through, but had to fall back. Clearly, she was prepared for a frontal assault. Smiling, Rick readied his ranged defense lucor and prepared to leap. He threw himself directly at the woman, and she naturally met him with a series of bursts that would have hammered him straight back down. But at the last second, Rick drew all of the bursts into the crystal sphere within him. For a split second, he saw the shock on her face. Then his knee slammed into her chin. She smashed back through the top of the aura sphere, briefly flailing in the air before coming back down. Though she landed on top of the sphere, furious and only slightly injured, red aura began to cling to her. She'd been out of contact with the aura sphere and was thus disqualified. Cursing in Russian, she jumped off the side and fell away. Realizing he was a target at the top of the sphere, Rick leapt through three different bunion steps around the sides of the sphere just to escape anyone pursuing him. Clinging to the side of the sphere was easy, but it was also risky, since a good blow might knock him out regardless of his defensive cores. He crept closer to the bottom where it met the ground, trying to find another target. Someone flashed in front of him, and Rick caught a glimpse of fists covered in flames. He dodged the first strike, but his attacker was coming with a rapid flurry of blows, and eventually he could only block, bracing his aura against the flames. Suddenly, Rick was hurtling backward through the air. He realized that he had been tricked. The flames were a distraction, hiding the true nature of the attack. It hadn't attempted to harm him, simply push him with a great deal of force so he was disqualified. He felt his back hit the aura sphere and break into the cold air. Chapter 30. Warrior's Reward. If Rick had been the fighter he was a year ago, he would have lost. He might have given up, or he might have fallen from the sphere before he even realized what was happening. But after juggling so many different lucors, Rick had already figured out what had happened and he reacted on instinct. As he broke through, he reached out and used his own aura to grab the edge of the sphere. His body jerked away from him, out in the cold air, but his arm remained inside the sphere. For a moment, he hung there, disoriented outside the sphere. The crowd cheered thunderously, nearly stunning him, but his instincts insisted there was no time for that. If he wasn't disqualified, he needed to get back inside before he was targeted. Bursts of aura began slamming into him, but Rick held his defensive cores firm and dragged himself back inside the sphere. He'd barely pulled his head in when he was hit head-on by a blizzard, but he channeled Lucrim to Katenka, and she manifested around him in a swirl of snow. Not only did she prevent it from freezing him, she managed to blunt the force, and he was able to fully pull himself back into the sphere.
That was great!
Despite the fight still going on, Ragest turned to him with a grin.
But others are going to try to copy you.
Rick didn't understand at first, then saw that the idea of partially leaving the sphere had caught on. A woman was crawling around the outside to get into a better position, while someone else hung on the outer curve with just one hand inside. Ragast gathered aura in his fists and then unleashed two massive beams simultaneously. Without a firm grip, both of the contestants were blown away from the sphere and immediately disqualified. Though Rick braced himself as Ragast clenched fists again, no more blasts came his way.
I want to fight you without any dirty tricks.
Ragast grinned, then threw himself at another opponent instead. Did that mean a temporary truce? Though Rick didn't trust it entirely, he didn't target Ragast. There were fewer competitors now, which gave him more space to work, but also made him a target. A huge woman was stomping around the side of the sphere toward him, walking on the steep angle as if it was even ground. Running would just seem like cowardice, so he braced himself for a brawl. Her fist hit hard, but it was nothing his defensive core couldn't handle. But the force pushed him back a step, and he lost his balance while trying to keep his foot in the aura. Before he could catch himself, another blow came. Rick managed to block that too, but it sent him staggering. He realized that if he kept that up, he would never regain his balance, so Rick gritted his teeth and let the blows through. They hammered into his chest and head, each one slamming into his defensive core. But without trying to block, Rick was able to regain his balance and push back, gripping the side of the sphere some distance away. That earned him a moment, but only a moment, as the woman leapt at him with both fists rising overhead. In midair, a white-hot beam of aura blasted her out of the side of the sphere. From the other side, Ragast gave him a thumbs up. But a moment later, he was struck by a flurry of dark motes. They impacted strangely as they struck him, not exploding, but seeming to shake his entire body. Ragast shuddered as his body was battered by the flood of motes, but managed to raise his hand toward the man who was releasing them. A beam shot out, but for the first time, Ragast saw it stopped. It hit a wall of motes, and they seemed to consume it, eating pieces of the beam with each impact until it was reduced to nothing. The storm of particles only intensified, battering Ragast down to the bottom of the sphere. He tried to summon a barrier around himself, but the motes ate away at it as well. They would obviously overcome him soon, and he would be forced outside the sphere. For a moment, Rick hesitated. It would be a good strategy to let Ragast get eliminated, but he discarded that as bad sportsmanship. What made him hesitate was the hungry way Alger watched the match, and that nearly forgotten dream. Rick leapt off the side of the sphere, trying to absorb the motes. They shifted direction, swept into one of the crystalline spheres, and Rick closed the distance to his target. But the man frowned at him and began releasing more, and suddenly the sphere felt unbelievably heavy. Though Rick tried to absorb them better, he realized that was a mistake. They were overwhelming his capacity to absorb, and some motes began to touch his body. Each impact didn't hurt, they simply left part of his body feeling as though it was completely gone. If he hadn't been under assault, he would have looked down to check that they hadn't erased holes in his flesh. His defensive core strained to compensate, and the dark blood kettle surged as it rarely did, but he could tell that it wouldn't be enough. Then a beam hit the man in the chest, and the assault of motes stopped. He managed to hold on, but Ragast released another beam and struck him against the side of the sphere. Their opponent struggled, forming a wall of motes that ate away Ragest's next attempt. Rick plunged directly through it, his elbow slamming into the man's jaw. Their opponent finally flew backward, leaving the sphere and collapsing to the ground. When Rick turned around, he realized that the sphere was almost completely empty. Only Ragest remained, straightening and wiping some blood from his mouth. He grinned, but didn't say anything. Rick found himself smiling back and let himself skid down the side of the sphere so they were facing each other. For a moment, they were silent, and Rick became aware of the crowds roaring around them. He let that sound fall away and just focused on his opponent. At any moment, Ragest would move, then the fight would begin. He saw the other man's arm shift and leapt in a bunion step. When Rick caught the side of the arena, he saw blinding beams shooting both where he had been standing and where he was most likely to have leaped beside Ragest. Doubting he could outplay his opponent that way, Rick went straight for him the next moment. Though he felt a beam impact his body, Rick hadn't been planning to appear beside Ragest and then strike him. He ran straight into the other man, shoulder first. Unfortunately, Ragest wasn't knocked back enough, digging his feet in and blasting Rick in the face with another beam. There was no more time for technique. Rick just tried to pummel his opponent. He wasn't sure if his absorption lucor was overloaded or if it didn't work against the pale beams, but every impact seared through him. Despite all the lucrum combined into so many cores, they were rapidly being burned apart. Rick started drawing heavily on Katenka's bond just to hang on a little longer and land a few more blows. All at once, he saw it. Ragest failed to defend his neck. Rick struck for the target, even as he saw a blinding light flash at his chest. When Rick could feel again, he was flat on his back on the arena floor. The bleary smears of white and black gradually focused into the dark stands around the stadium. Rick realized that he had made a mistake, going for a weak point when the actual goal was to knock his opponent out of the arena, which was empty. Rick struggled painfully to get up, staring at the empty sphere. Across the arena, he saw Ragest lying on his back, having fallen out of the sphere as well. He had absolutely no idea what had happened, but then his attention was captured by the large screens overhead. They were showing a slow-motion replay. Ragest's blast had knocked Rick out of the sphere immediately, but the blow to the neck had sent Ragest falling backward. Rick had left the sphere nearly a full second before Ragest, yet the announcers and commentators seemed to be talking excitedly. One of the replays showed a close-up of the strike to the neck, apparently approving of its brutality. Abruptly worried, Rick looked down, but Ragest was struggling to his feet, grinning.
That was amazing.
He rubbed his neck in pain, but then rushed over to Rick. Though Rick thought he was probably in better shape, he felt burned out and didn't feel like moving so quickly. Still, when the other man thrust a hand toward him, Rick was able to lift his arm enough to shake it. The crowd roared approval around them. The aura sphere finally faded, leaving Rick momentarily blinded in the absence of its light. An enormous man, with a beard half the size of his considerable chest, smashed down onto the arena beside them. Rick instinctively tried to raise his arms to fight, only to have his wrist grasped and thrust into the air alongside Ragest's.
"Best fight I've seen in years!"
The man roared out something in Russian, then turned back to them and stopped dangling the two by their wrists.
"Mark my words, you both receive Great Seal of Siberia!"
Rick found himself smiling. It hurt to stand, and it was taking all his self-control not to rub his scorched torso, but he actually felt good. For winning, yes, but more importantly because the fight had been a satisfying success for him.
"I would like to pay my respects as well." The sound of the smooth voice made all Rick's sense of accomplishment drain away. Alger stood beside them, both hands still over his cane, looking genteel, except for the grin on his face. It spread wider and wider, as if it would tear out the sides of his face.
"This is what the showdown should be. This is what the new generation needs."
Alger raised one hand toward them, and a stylized letter A burned into the air in front of their faces.
I grant you both my seal as well, in the hope that you will go on to do great things.
It should have been his moment of triumph, yet Rick could only stare at the mad grimace that no longer resembled a smile. Alger walked toward him, eyes burning with the fires of a thousand battles. When he spoke, his voice was quiet, ignoring the arena to speak to Rick alone.
This is all I've ever wanted from you. Brutal striving, endless ambition. This is only the beginning, you know. In time, you will grow stronger and stronger, leaving behind the limits of these civilized matches. There will be only the savagery of true warrior spirits, and then, in the end, there will be only power.
Rick turned away from the mad grin and tried to focus on the cheering crowds. Chapter 31. Ether Experimentation. Normally, Melissa didn't pay too much attention to her brother's matches, beyond keeping up with the results so that she could talk to him. She was happy for his progress, but a lot of the fighting was just too fast for her, and it wasn't her favorite thing to watch anyway. Yet now that she was traveling and couldn't talk to him easily, she found herself absorbing everything she could. A frustrating number of showdown events weren't put online or were only put up on special services you had to pay for, and Melissa didn't have time for that. The last really good one she'd seen had been his fight in Siberia, which had actually been pretty exciting. After that, he seemed to have kept a lower profile to build on what he'd learned in that fight. Sighing, Melissa closed her laptop and rolled over in her bed. Thinking about her brother would just make her loneliness worse and remind her how many days it was until they could meet. Instead, she lay there for a while, thinking about her project. Everyone was supposed to come up with something big for the conclusion of their time as a young Lucrum artist of America. For most, that seemed to be just assumed to be either some kind of financial lucre or some kind of combat gimmick. Emphasis on the gimmick. So many of the things Melissa had seen were basically just a known skill tweaked a tiny little bit so that it would technically count as something new. She didn't get the financial stuff, but she'd bet actual money that it was a similar thing. The point for most of her peers was to get a line on their resume, or their curriculum vitae, as they insisted on calling it. For her part, she wanted to come up with something that was actually useful. This was her best chance, since as a YLAA person, she had access to experts, expensive databases, and even some free resources. She thought it was funny how some of the experts actually seemed relieved to see her. A few were corporate tools, but others just seemed glad to get an interesting problem for once and became super helpful as soon as they realized she wasn't crazy. The problem was that she needed to come up with something that didn't just boil down to making use of her ether void. That would be unique, but it would also just be taking advantage of what she was. She could do that whenever she wanted, so she was trying to develop something cool. It would have been much, much easier to just stand up and get her stuff, but instead, Melissa spent a while stretching halfway across her floor to grab it without standing up. Eventually, she pulled back her notebook and pack of a few supplies. Manifesting her ether void had become easy, and she no longer burned anything, which she was sure the expensive bed and carpet thanked the heavens for. Creating an aura that took advantage of it without just replicating it, though. According to the big fancy database of aura techniques, there were 108 classes of manifestation and 108 variations, meaning 11,664 total combinations. Melissa didn't have time to try them all, but she was methodically going through the major classes and recording her results. One at a time, she summoned up her aura, combined it with her ether void, and hoped for some sort of reaction. A negative result. Most of them were. Melissa dutifully marked it down in her notebook and moved on to the next one. Science. Most of the others thought she was weird, and not only because she hadn't explained about her ether void. It was actually about how seriously she took it. Even the really committed people assumed that they'd have a cushy position waiting for them after they left the YLAA. The idea of tapping into raw desperation struck them as lower class in some way. Her work didn't come up with anything new, but Melissa got so wrapped up in it that she jumped and dropped her notebook when her phone beeped. Just a notification. a reminder about Lisa's call. She'd known she'd forget and put in the reminder for that very reason. Setting aside her work, Melissa grabbed her laptop again and got ready.
Melissa, you look well.
As usual, Lisa smiled broadly when she saw her. She was looking pretty good herself, clearly putting in extra effort while she was part of the dating scene. Normally, Lisa only wore small studs in her ears, but she had larger earrings and a silver necklace on that day.
You wouldn't say that if you knew that I was sitting in our hotel instead of going on the trip.
Melissa slumped down on the bed and sighed.
But they're touring a freaking wine cellar today. Maybe I'm just poor, but that strikes me as so ridiculously boring. I can't tell the difference between a 91 Baguette and a 97 Eiffel Tower.
Lisa smiled, but also cocked her head.
I didn't think you were in France. Nope, still Spain. Wine is just very French-seeming to me. You might not have enjoyed the tour, but the process of creating wine is actually quite interesting. The flavor is obviously impacted by the weather and differences in the soil, but even natural lucrum drift has an impact. Wait, really?
Melissa's head jerked up, and she stared toward the door as if she could see to the tour.
You don't think this was actually some kind of training in disguise, do you? Probably not. As far as I know, wine has never been significantly enriched with lucrum, at least not without ruining the taste. But I know a little bit about it because the natural processes are similar to those for plants that can be used for supplements. I should have known. Everything is supplements with you.
Melissa grinned just to make it clear that she was joking, since she didn't mind talking about that stuff.
Speaking of, did you get my package thing? What do you think? Could it work?
Instead of answering immediately, Lisa picked up an object that proved to be the little black bottle Melissa had sent. Lisa let the pause stretch, which was super anxiety-inducing, but eventually she spoke.
As a supplement, it would function. You've come remarkably far in so little time. But even if you can produce these for no cost... I can't. Come on, Lise, just lay it on me. It's too niche as a supplement, and if you try to make a business off it, the business wouldn't survive.
Lisa set down the bottle and gave an apologetic shrug.
You know I wouldn't buy any from you out of pity, so that means I'd get, at most, one or two bottles a year. I figured.
Melissa groaned and slumped down on the bed, not caring that the camera would be mostly her hair.
It's really, really hard to make a living when all the big corps are... Well, it'd be silly to lecture you about that. But I'm glad at least it worked. There is one exception. If you knew someone who needed a lot of this kind of supplement, a private deal with them could make your career. Because the pill is partially fashioned within your ether void, the number of people who can make it is extremely low. That part was really clever if I'm coming off too critical. Find the right person, and this alone could get you a job.
Though Melissa's heart leapt for a moment, it leapt straight back down as she understood.
As a dependent, you mean. I'd be completely reliant on that person needing me. They stop needing my pills and bam, I'm jobless and homeless. That's true, but it's really true of most people.
Lisa gave her a weak smile.
Almost everyone could get fired at any moment, and they're probably not ready. People think that they're safer in normal jobs, but when the economy turns bad, it's really not. A corporation doesn't care about you, but if your employer knows you personally, they might be more generous. But they could also be a real creep. No. Thanks for giving it to me straight, Lisa. I'll keep working on the idea, but I think my aura thing is more likely to be my project. Hey, it's up to you. If we're talking about work, I know I brought it up, but I get too much talking about work here.
Melissa perked back up and twisted a lock of hair around her finger with exaggerated sass.
So come on, girlfriend. Dish. How are things with your boy toy lately? I regret starting to tell you about my personal life every day.
Lisa smiled as she spoke, but then released a heavy sigh it seemed like she'd been holding for a long time.
I don't think things are going to work out with Nathan. I liked his confidence, and I thought the arrogance would wear off once we got to know each other, but instead it's getting under my skin.
Lisa went on to explain about several minor incidents, mostly looking for affirmation. Normally, Melissa was not into that sort of thing, but she liked Lisa, and the older woman obviously needed someone to confide in. Melissa mostly kept herself to simple confirmations and a few questions until Lisa finally brought herself around to the conclusion she'd really known all along.
So I'm thinking of breaking up.
I thought I might do it indirectly because I don't want to lecture. Is that bad of me?
No way. Nathan is a douche.
Melissa shook her head slowly.
I never liked him. I just didn't say anything because I wasn't going to insult your boyfriend. You should call Diego again. He was nice. But he wanted a family right away, and I just don't think our goals...
Lisa wiped her eyes with one hand, and her gaze became clearer.
No, I can't do that. I just have to keep playing the numbers game, I guess.
Hey, don't focus on the negative. As far as I can tell, your business is doing great, right? I'm basing that entirely based on the number of abs I counted in your new website intro.
Though she laughed awkwardly, the tension at the corners of Lisa's eyes eased.
I didn't like that, but everybody says that's what draws in customers. I'm finally turning a profit, but you can't make much money just focusing on discerning clients. You need to cater to a few power addicts and jocks.
I wasn't complaining about the abs, mind you.
Melissa actually found Lisa's ongoing success a bit inspirational, though she couldn't bring herself to say that. In Melissa's family, self-employed meant either being a bum or running a multi-level marketing scheme. The fact that Lisa was making it on her own was nice.
If we're back on this,
Lisa leaned forward under one arm.
I really am curious about the sample I sent you. Did you run the tests?
The golden stuff?
Sure.
Melissa actually had that within scrabbling distance, so she grabbed the petri dish and showed it off on the camera.
It burned right up, just like the previous one. I don't know how good the color is for you, but it's all that green gold residue.
To Melissa's surprise, Lisa's expression immediately turned serious.
You really ran that through your ether void?
Just like you said, yeah. Do you need me to do it again, right in front of you or something?
I trust you, it's just...
Lisa ran both hands through her hair, suddenly very distant.
I thought I removed all the lucrum and lucrum-boosting components. There shouldn't be a reaction like that.
I think you did, at least as far as I could tell.
Melissa shifted her head to the side, letting some concern onto her face.
Is this a problem?
It might be, but I can't be sure yet. What could be reacting?
Lisa stared at nothing for a while, then suddenly gathered herself.
Melissa, I'm sorry, but I need to cut this short. If there are trace components in there, that's a bad sign. They're toxic at best, or maybe... Listen, I need to look into this.
There was no sense in talking to Lisa when she got that focused, which Melissa reflected was a bit like her brother. She just smiled and nodded.
Okay, I understand. Just let me know if you need any more help, okay?
Lisa nodded and then ended the call, presumably to go investigate her theory. Melissa stared at the residue in the petri dish, puzzled by how it could have contained such shocking results. But it was way beyond her pay grade, and she had a lot of other stuff to do, so she set it aside and grabbed her notebook again. She needed to get through as many of the formulas as possible. Once she finally met her brother, she wasn't going to want to work. Chapter 32. Family in Vietnam. Though Rick failed to earn any more seals, it didn't bother him at all. His card held 5 seals, which was unusually high for a new showdown contestant. In most events, he performed closer to the top of the group now, which was enough to keep H happy. Even that wasn't too important to him. Every month was a victory, taking him a little closer to all his goals. As the month in Vietnam and the meeting with Melissa drew closer, he knew that he would be training less. But not only would that be worth it to spend time with family, it actually coincided well with a plateau in his growth. He still took Formula T regularly, but it grew more and more difficult to layer lucrum onto the triune golden spheres. H suggested that he needed something more dramatic to break through, and that all he could do for the time being was proceed slowly. When at last the helicopter headed down toward their destination, Rick found himself pacing back and forth across the main chamber. They were headed to the hotel as planned, and he'd gotten texts from Melissa confirming that she had arrived first. Also confirmations that she had developed a crippling heroin addiction and sold her kidneys. Yet he still found himself struggling against formless anxiety. Maybe it was just the amount of time it had been since he'd seen his sister in person, or maybe it was the abrupt shift away from his focus on the showdown. It was easy to fall into a cycle of training and fighting, and that cycle was now disrupted.
Stop that!
H emerged from the cockpit, glaring at Rick's feet as if his shoes had personally insulted him.
Have you been keeping something from me?
That's exactly what I said. I'm just anxious to meet my sister.
I don't care about that. Showdown candidates have family visit them all the time. What I don't like is taking us into a smaller location just so you can meet this uncle.
He's busy with work. This is the best way to make it convenient. Rick smiled at his mentor, anticipation briefly overcoming both annoyance and anxiety. Thanks for this, H. Trust me, I'll keep up my training and I'll be there to meet you for every event.
You'd better. Don't neglect your exact schedule.
H shoved a case of Formula T at him, which Rick took carefully. Not long after, they landed at their destination. It was a small airfield cleared from the jungle, not a helipad, but the town nearby catered to the many international travelers with large amounts of lucrum. Rick checked into his hotel, confirmed the training schedule, and dropped off his things. Meaningless details. Since he was running exactly on time, he headed down to find Melissa. They'd agreed to meet in a plaza that, on the internet, looked like a safe public place. In reality, there were a lot more street carts and random people. Given how many of them were foreigners there for work or pleasure, it wasn't easy to find Melissa either, but eventually he spotted familiar waves of brown hair. She was just sitting on a bench, toying with her phone and occasionally looking around, yet Rick felt a huge flood of relief. He'd been planning to sneak up on her or play some sort of trick, but all such thoughts vanished as soon as he got close. Somehow she still hadn't noticed, so he just shuffled up beside her, taking a moment to swallow before he could speak. Hey. It wasn't eloquent, but it was enough.
Brother!
Melissa beamed as soon as she saw him, abandoning her phone to leap up and hug him. He squeezed back tightly before they parted to grin at one another.
God, it's so good to see you again. I mean, I've seen you a lot, but you know what I mean. Have you found Uncle Frank yet?
I literally just flew in. I sent him a message about meeting up at a town further north, but haven't gotten a response back yet. So let's just catch up.
I have so much to tell you about Europe. Did you know that mimes aren't actually trapped in boxes?
Melissa grabbed her things, which included his arm. She stayed latched to him as they wandered back toward the hotel, talking about everything that had passed since they'd last spoken. It turned out that Melissa kept fairly close tabs on him, which made him regret that he couldn't do the same for her. But the showdown was a public event, whereas YLAA activities were decidedly not. He reconsidered his thought as he realized how much she enjoyed telling him about everything and how much he enjoyed hearing it. When they got back to the hotel, Melissa insisted they walk a little longer. He was happy to do so, but it made him realize just how hot it was. It hadn't reached him much when he'd just come out of the air-conditioned hotel, but now it was seeping into his body and oozing from his pores. When they got back, he let Melissa set up her things on the second bed while he ducked into the bathroom to clean up and change. Rick returned in a short-sleeved shirt and saw Melissa staring at him. He expected a joke of some kind, then all at once realized that her eyes were on his demonic tattoo.
When did you get that?
She asked, much quieter than before. In Siberia. Not everything that happened there was public. But don't worry, it's not like the demonic bonds we've always worried about. Actually, well, I imagine you don't want to talk about finance right now, but I'm starting to think we might have been misled about those.
Oh, that isn't going to shock me.
Melissa sat down on her bed and swung her legs idly.
A lot of people in the YLAA pay for everything via a demonic bond. Like, they didn't even think about it, or couldn't imagine that bonds could be bad. I figured maybe that only applied to the types of bonds you get if you were mega rich, but I guess it makes sense.
Having worried about a potential conflict, Rick smiled in relief. It really depends on the quality. And picking the right demon, of course.
The right demon, huh?
Melissa wiggled her eyebrows at him.
Is that what they call it these days? Do you have a sexy succubus living in your right arm, dearest brother? So, this is your sister.
Katenka swirled into being beside her.
I understand that she's just joking, but tell her that assumption is offensive.
Rick looked back and forth between the two of them, attention suddenly split. Is there any way I can manifest you so we can just talk?
It would be an unnecessary expense, really. Are you talking to the demon now?
Melissa poked her head up into his line of sight.
Oh, dang. I didn't think there would actually be an intelligent demon around. Or wait, is this a bit? Are you just messing with me?
Rick focused back on his sister. She's actually here, but she's not a succubus. It's some sort of demonic fusion they do in Siberia. Anyway, she didn't like your joke.
Oh, no.
Melissa abruptly bowed down against the bed, though not quite facing Katenka.
Please don't eat me for my impertinence, oh devourer of souls.
Katenka chuckled.
I think I will get along with your sister.
What's that? Rick pretended to cock his head in her direction, then looked back to Melissa. She says you're a big doo-doo head.
Oh, dearie me.
Melissa drew back with a fake gasp.
You don't think she's into coprophilia, do you?
That drew a curious glance from Katenka. Apparently, she didn't know everything about the human realm after all. It's when you're aroused by... Rick cut off his explanation. You know what? You can figure it out on your own. Am I going to have to keep repeating everything you say?
You haven't repeated much of anything,
Katenka pointed out. But she began to fade away.
Tell your sister that it was nice to meet her, but that I'll leave the two of you alone for now.
Once Katenka left, Rick was able to relax. Not because the demon bothered him. He actually thought that she would get along with Melissa, but because participating in two separated conversations at once had been chaotic. Melissa had a ton of questions to ask him about what had happened, so they both lounged on their beds and just caught up. They didn't hear from Uncle Frank that night, but the next morning Rick got a text. Not only was their uncle ready for them, he was coming to meet them. The two wolfed down the hotel's breakfast, grabbed a few simple things, and then headed out. It took them longer than he expected, since they were meeting their uncle halfway. Though Rick considered manifesting his bike, some of the streets had horrible potholes, and the lanes weren't very well respected. For that matter, displaying something that expensive might mark him as a target. In the end, it didn't matter at all, as taking the rickety buses together with Melissa was fun in a different way. Though they kept chatting as they headed north of the city, their conversation faded when they finally saw their uncle. They'd seen him many times via video, but Rick still paused to finally see him in the flesh. He was a bit heavier than he had been before, but the durable pants, brightly colored shirt, and broad hat were much the same. When he saw them, he spread his arms wide in the middle of the street.
Rick, Melissa.
Uncle Frank.
Melissa ran to embrace him, and he squeezed her tight. Rick followed at a more measured pace, though he didn't really care that people were watching them. When Melissa pulled away, their uncle turned to Rick and clasped his hand firmly. His grip was strong, but it was a warm strength that didn't try to break his hand.
You're looking strong, Rick. I worried that the showdown might be bad for you, but you seem to have done well for yourself. I'm managing so far.
Rick smiled back at their uncle, but found himself considering. Uncle Frank's generation rate was only 85,000 lucrum. He immediately hesitated at the word only. For so many years, his uncle had been far stronger, wealthier, and more successful than the rest of their family. That was still unquestionably true, and Rick could tell that his uncle's lucors were formidable. Yet in terms of raw power, he wasn't a monster like so many of the people he'd encountered with generation rates in six digits.
I'm so glad this finally worked out.
Uncle Frank gestured for them to follow him and began heading down a smaller side street.
I'd wanted you to visit for years, but I've been traveling too much, and some areas are too risky. But the timing couldn't be better.
You don't have too much work?
Melissa asked. Their uncle shook his head.
Not that, exactly. More that I've been in Vietnam long enough to know a little about it. If we'd met up somewhere I just arrived, I'd be as much a tourist as you, and we'd all go around being tourists, I suppose. But this way, I can actually improve your visit.
Yep, that's the real reason we visited you, Uncle Frank. We just wanted a free tour guide.
Uncle Frank chuckled.
Well, I can only tell you very narrow things about history, but if you want some good food, you've come to the right place. Is it too early for lunch? I skipped breakfast.
He led them to a noodle place, and just as promised, it was good. Despite the fact that they'd spoken many times, they found themselves catching up anyway. Just being together in person brought up so many details lost in their brief conversations. There was relatively little new, and everything Melissa shared was repetitive, but Rick found that he didn't care. Despite the hideously moist heat, Rick kept a long-sleeved shirt on the entire time, as he didn't want to have a conversation with his uncle about the demonic bond. Maybe it would have been nothing. Uncle Frank certainly wouldn't have raged like so many in their family often did, but he would have noticed, and it would have shifted the conversation. At the moment, he preferred their comfortable family ties. They spent the rest of the day without any set agenda, but their uncle had more than a few things he wanted to show them. He only pointed out a local museum he said was worth visiting, instead using their time together to go see a series of waterfalls. Though not usually Rick's thing, he could admit they were beautiful, and Melissa seemed entranced. For the most part, Rick simply relaxed, but he couldn't help but go through his exercises during one of their trips on a bus. He noticed that Melissa was doing something as well, her inner void seething in a way that was new. It was unclear if Uncle Frank was training as well, but there were a couple occasions when he had to step aside to take a call. Apparently, even now, he couldn't get entirely off work. As the sun set, they visited a hole-in-the-wall restaurant for dinner and ate slowly. At the end of the meal, Uncle Frank ordered some sort of local alcohol and seemed surprised when Rick ordered some as well. Melissa played at doing the same, and likely could have given local laws, but instead got some locally squeezed fruit juice. By the end of the night, they both followed her lead. "You two need to get back, don't you?" Uncle Frank eventually sat back and laced his fingers over his stomach. "It's a couple hours at least, and sometimes the power gives out. Best to be in a hotel with a generator when that happens."
"We can't stay wherever you sleep," Melissa asked.
Their uncle only shook his head. "It's just a little tent alongside other tents. Plus, there are a few shady types." Rick hadn't been thinking about the length of the trip back, but now considered the darkness skeptically. "How cautious do we need to be on the way back?"
"Not very." To his surprise, Uncle Frank waved the issue aside. "The towns and cities are actually safer in this part of the country, so someone with your strength doesn't need to be worried. If you want to avoid getting into any fights, take a taxi. I can tell you the names of reputable ones when you go."
Melissa sat forward, watching him carefully.
"Did you imply that it's more dangerous out in the wild? Does that mean we won't get to see your work?"
"Don't worry, it's not so bad as all that. No, I actually have a few secure locations to show you. I may not be able to narrate the history of every location, but they'll probably be different from anything else you've seen before."
"So we can see you tomorrow?"
"I don't know about tomorrow, but the day after, maybe. Let's set a date."
They scheduled the next time they'd meet, then finally headed back to their hotel. Though the day had been relaxed compared to many lately, it felt richer and fuller than most of them in a way that Rick didn't expect. In the taxi, Melissa slumped against him and actually drifted to sleep. He would have picked her up and carried her to bed, except he realized how incredibly suspicious that would look. So he poked his sister awake and kept her that way long enough for them to get back. She kicked off her shoes and fell straight onto her bed, while he cleaned up a bit and went through final exercises before retiring as well. His sister began snoring, but he only fell asleep more easily. Chapter 33. Ancient Ruins. Over the next week, the two of them met with Uncle Frank when they could and just chatted or trained when he was too busy. The conversation didn't seem endless the way it had during the first couple days, but it was still great to be around family. Some of the ruins their uncle took them to were interesting, but they were all relatively close to nearby towns. Rick got the sense that the real work and the most interesting finds lay further into the jungle. When it came time for him to participate in a showdown event, he was surprised how much he resented it. He found himself feeling spite over tiny details. The arena was smaller, the crowds noisier, the events less tightly organized. But the truth was that he didn't care about any of those things, if they were even substantially different. He just hated losing time with family. The events themselves went well, as usual, trying less prestigious events to familiarize himself with new varieties of aura. H told him that Vietnam had a few truly formidable sects, but they tended toward the spiritual, and few got involved with events like the showdown. In any case, they didn't make an appearance, and Rick was left feeling a bit like he'd wasted his time. During his absence, however, Melissa seemed to have wheedled their uncle into letting them come along with him on a more exciting trip. It would take another few days, during which time he laid the groundwork, so Rick stayed at the hotel and focused on training. Melissa trained alongside him, performing a number of unusual experiments he wanted to ask her about later. That seemed less interesting than finally being able to see their uncle's work, however. Rick actually spent a little while figuring out what to wear for the first time in months, since he needed to balance multiple factors. His defensive core would protect him from most things, but his clothes could still get caught on branches or torn up. Eventually, they headed out to meet Uncle Frank, though not at any of the usual locations, just a random street at the edge of the city. When they arrived, Rick finally understood. This time they were met with a vehicle. It flew in like a hovering beige brick, all unusual angles and metal frames. The seats themselves looked relatively normal, they were just surrounded by defensive structures.
Ooh, is that a Lucrum Jeep?
Melissa headed forward as soon as it landed, examining it curiously. Rick was thinking of calling it a Lucrum tank, but decided to keep that to himself.
I do a lot of my work in this baby.
Uncle Frank slapped the side of the car and then gestured for them to climb in.
This is a high-end all-terrain vehicle. It was top of the line when I bought it, and that was years ago, but I've kept it in good shape and kept tweaking.
What makes it an all-terrain vehicle?
Melissa hopped over the side to sit in the shotgun position, so Rick jumped into the back.
I mean, if they can all fly.
Mostly durability. It could plow through a jungle if necessary. I'm going to keep the barriers down because the air conditioning doesn't work great, but it can close almost airtight. I'm not saying that it could go underwater or into space, but falling into either wouldn't be an immediate disaster.
Huh. If you can't go into space, what's the point?
The vehicle lifted into the air, and they headed away from the city. They didn't follow any roads, so Rick expected to be in unoccupied territory almost immediately. But to his surprise, there continued to be small villages beneath them. No one seemed to care about the Lucrum vehicle floating overhead, so he just examined the landscape while the others talked.
So far, this actually seems really calm.
Melissa sat back in her seat, staring idly over the landscape.
Were you just lying about it being so dangerous to make us think you were cool, Uncle Frank? Because if you want us to think you're cool, just say you smoke marijuana.
Uncle Frank chuckled. Oh, there are real risks. Usually not much worse than some of what you two have faced, but they do occur.
Come on, I was joking. But I was serious. You know what I mean. What makes this job risky?
Several things.
Their uncle was silent for a time, his hands on the wheel, even though the Lucrum vehicle continued without changing course.
First, there's a difference between jobs that are dangerous for the average person and jobs that are dangerous for a skilled professional. Many ancient sites have enough residual lucrum to serve as nests for lucrum-using animals, for example. They're a good reason that no one untrained should go out there, but they aren't really more of a threat than anything Rick would have encountered at his old job.
The Peakless Wildlife Refuge is that dangerous? Rick asked. His uncle smiled ruefully and shook his head.
You've seen an aura bear. A creature that big that can generate aura? I'm not saying it's the most lethal animal or anything, but it's nothing to sneeze at.
Ooh,
Melissa sat forward eagerly.
What is the most lethal animal?
In terms of total deaths per year, the hippopotamus. I know you wouldn't expect it, but they're aggressive.
Uncle Frank was silent for a while, almost as if he wouldn't continue, then abruptly did.
But in terms of killing people with leucors, it's the South American emerald dragon. It actually isn't technically a dragon, but it looks similar. Anyway, it's fairly poisonous, but what makes it the most lethal is that it lives near cities and it doesn't flee humans.
That was mildly interesting, but nothing they couldn't get from a documentary. Before Melissa could ask more questions about animals, Rick spoke up. If those are the dangers to untrained people, what's the real threat? Uncle Frank went silent again, then nodded, as if to himself.
When you two were younger, I didn't talk about these things because I didn't want to scare you, but I suppose you're adults now. The real danger, as usual, is humans. The fact that the things we find are valuable means that there are people who might want to take them. Usually everything is peaceful enough,
but not always.
You mean there are Lucrum pirates?
Melissa asked eagerly. That got a chuckle, but a weak one. Don't imagine them wearing eye patches, but yes. Now, it's nothing too serious recently. Most of the time when a government is funding a job, there's just competition between the researchers and freelancers like myself. But when sects hire people to search out obscure plants or ruins, those can fetch a high enough price that it draws less reputable types.
But I assume we're not checking one of those today.
Of course not. This one isn't actually a local government job. It's a point of interest for the Global Lucrum Authority. We already staked out the region and confirmed there was nothing dangerous, but the ruins are broken into many fragments that will require careful searching. You two can help with that. Just don't touch anything. Rick frowned at the mention of the GLA. Why is it a point of interest for them? Is it a Lucrum anomaly? Not at all, but it's somewhat related. It's hard to explain. Uncle Frank went silent for a while, idly tapping his hands on the steering wheel. Okay, think about it like this. Earth runs into Lucrum as it moves through space. Sometimes there's a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less, but the differences are small, rounding errors. Usually. But not now. For the past 10 years or so, there's been a steady increase in Lucrum, but even that is controversial. The thing is, there can be brief spikes, something to do with sunspots and solar wind. During that time, there have been more of those than usual. So some people think that there hasn't been any real increase, just a coincidental bunch of events raising the average. The numbers are arguable.
Lies, darned lies, and statistics.
Melissa nodded along, but with a puzzled expression.
What does that have to do with your job, though?
All that new Lucrum is more intense, or maybe a little different from normal. It doesn't really matter for individuals or businesses, but the stuff is degrading Lucrum and ether patterns in old ruins faster than normal. Suddenly, a lot of groups that thought they had decades to find their old scrolls or finish an archaeological survey want it done ASAP. That means more work for me, but the field is also more crowded. That was a much more indirect reason than Rick had expected, but he realized that he should have known. Everything in the modern world was increasingly interconnected, with cause and effect often separated by a dozen little systems. At least it seemed like the trip might be fun, and Uncle Frank relaxed once he talked about the interesting parts of his work. As they spoke, they'd finally left civilized areas and begun flying over unoccupied jungle. When they finally stopped, Rick didn't see anything particularly unusual. As they circled, Uncle Frank pointed out that several strange hills were actually overgrown buildings. Eventually, he found a place and stopped the vehicle just over the trees. You two jump down and I'll lock up, he said. Just don't touch anything that looks built by human hands. There shouldn't be any dangerous plants or animals here, but we don't want to damage anything. They nodded and then hopped over the edge, Rick jumping directly after Melissa in case there turned out to be any surprises. But they snapped through a few branches and landed on the dirt without any problems. The area seemed almost dead, actually, with the plants growing more sparsely and a few animal sounds surrounding them. Overhead, Uncle Frank jumped out as well, but not before initiating a process that left the Lucrum vehicle covered in a shell of ether-enhanced armor, a way of preventing anyone from running off with it, presumably. Rick didn't know how expensive a vehicle like that was, but it had to be a pretty big part of their uncle's livelihood. Okay, kids, let's head this way. I thought I saw something good over there. Uncle Frank led them a short distance to one of the lumpy hills, showing them where to step and leaning aside from overhanging branches. What they found appeared to be a shrine. It was overgrown by moss and small plants, and part of it had been broken down by a tree's roots. Yet there was a strange beauty to it. The stone of the shrine had been carved extensively, the complex ridges and patterns clear even after age had eroded them. Rick and Melissa looked over it, while Uncle Frank made a note on a small electronic device Rick didn't recognize. Some sort of special GPS, maybe. Okay, this one is good. Let's move southeast next. As he started away, Melissa stared after him in surprise.
Wait, that's it? We don't, I don't know, extract it or investigate the inside?
This place is mostly important to historians and for scientific measurements.
their uncle Castor an amused smile as they began to move away. Did you think that we'd be finding golden idols and ancient training manuals?
I mean, not really, but a girl can hope.
As they trekked on, the trees parted to reveal an overgrown plaza, and Melissa perked up.
Hey, that looks like some kind of ancient sect hideout. Any chance there will be something fun there?
Possibly. Uncle Frank made a note on his device and frowned. We actually didn't think there would be any structures of this size, so this one might be valuable. The stones appear to be damaged. They probably had inscriptions, but they're lost to time now. We can walk on them, but walk softly. I think there might be a basement underneath. As they explored into the courtyard, Rick was surprised to see several large faces carved into the stone. The complex patterns of stonework looked similar to the small shrine they had found first, but there hadn't been any human features. These looked like normal humans wearing elaborate crowns, except perhaps for the eyes. He wasn't sure if there had been heavy damage to them or if there were strange patterns carved in the pupils. Just when he was about to ask who had made them, Melissa spoke up.
Guys, there's a staircase going down over here.
Really? Uncle Frank headed over toward her quickly. Definitely don't go down. We should get a team for that.
Ooh, why? Could there be traps?
Of course not. Even if they left anything like that, it would have degraded long ago. Ancient people might have been able to create ether, but they were much worse at using it to enchant solid matter. Any residue would be of interest to Lucrum archaeologists, not something we could notice.
Oh, can you at least tell me that you've run into a trap at some point?
Actually, yes. Uncle Frank stopped with an odd smile on his face. There was this tiny little Egyptian tomb, not related to any of their dynasties, and no one thought it would contain anything of great value. But the entrance had a pit trap that had been rebuilt several times, with almost perfectly preserved skeletons at the bottom. That's still the most valuable find I've ever seen, personally.
A pit trap!
Melissa thrust both fists over her head.
I'll take it!
Though Rick listened to their conversation with a slight smile on his face, he was fairly distracted. Not just with looking at the ruins and trying not to step on anything, but automatically sensing the area around him. He hadn't intended to, but being in a natural environment triggered his old instincts searching for Lucrum anomalies. There was nothing of the sort, though the average activity around the ruins was higher than normal. And then there was the massive source of Lucrum hovering overhead. Rick looked up in time to see the slim vehicle slide down to the other side of the courtyard. It folded back into a small bar, similar to his bicycle, leaving a man wearing camouflage and carrying a gun.
Looks like this was a good tip after all.
The man smiled and lowered the weapon to point at them.
It's mine now.